You're listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. For more information and to support the show, head to wespeakcommon.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with The Dice Dungeon and Describe. The Dice Dungeon is your one-stop shop for all things D&D, from premium dice sets to rolling trays and adventures and loads more. You can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON to get 10% off your entire order at The Dice Dungeon right now. And if you're looking for finely crafted box text to improve your player's immersion, then head over to Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. You can subscribe to Describe and get 10% off your subscription with the code COMMON at checkout. Links to both of our partners are in the description below. Today, on this episode of Tinkerer's Toolbox, we're talking about Baldur's Gate 3 and what we would and wouldn't steal from their rule changes. Welcome to We Speak Common. And welcome back, my partner in crime, and the man who I have spent pretty much every spare moment of my life with for the last almost a month. Can you believe it's been a month that Baldur's Gate 3 has been out? James, how are you? How are you doing? What's going on in your world?
Good, thanks, Corvus.
Oh, yes. Hello, Auric. Do you know what? At some point, we're going to have to make our Baldur's Gate 3 characters as actual D&D characters and play them out in, like, and put them in our world. Because we're co-DMs as well, so we can do whatever the fuck we want with our world. That'd be so cool. Little cameos.
But yeah, I'm pretty good. Sadly, at the end of my nice long holiday now.
Yes, I've done the optimal thing.
Yeah, which is just before September.
I'm really proud of myself, because usually I wait until you're just back in at work and you go, "Ben, I'm really, really busy in September. You should know this by now. I've been a teacher for many years. Why the fuck are you asking me to give you all my free time right now?" Whereas this year, I've remembered.
You've got in there nice and early.
Oh, yes, I have. How long have you got now? You've got like a week left, haven't you?
It's not even a week. Days. Oh. I have days left, Ben.
Dead man walking, everybody. Dead man walking. Pour one out.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I sent you this TikTok the other day of... What was it?
It's not the teachers. One where it's like, "Oh, here's me on the first day of school."
And here's me at the start of the first day of school, and here's me at the end of the first day. But they're all teachers, and I thought it was hilarious.
See, their end point is my start point, and then my end point is even worse.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Very well. Apart from the dreading going back to work, how else is life? What's going on?
It's pretty good. You know, I've got lots of hours in Baldur's Gate 3.
Do you know how many hours? Have you looked recently?
I mean, I can very quickly look right now, because
go on,
you know,
load it up.
It's right there on Steam, 110 hours.
Oh my God, should we see how many I've got? Because you've been off work because of the summer holidays,
yeah,
you have put some solo hours in that I haven't put in, so I don't think I've reached the 100 yet.
Hang on. And just so people know, the solo hours I've put in have all been up to the point to me and Ben had played. Like,
yeah, we'll get into this, because we have, this has been a true test of friendship. Okay, hang on, let me see. Library, where is it? Baldur's Gate 3. That can't be right.
Go on, how many?
53.1.
Yeah.
That feels so... You've played double the time that I've played. Jesus, man. I feel like a rookie.
Yeah, honestly, I could rinse her at one so quick now.
Yeah, I don't even want to know. Well, what's going on with me? My life is good. My life is fine. I'm going to tell everyone now, I have got a glass of wine. It's one of those. I was on my way home from work, and I had to take a parcel to the Tesco Express to like give it to the everyman delivery guy to send some clothes back. And I've had a craving. This makes me sound like an alcoholic. I've had a craving for a good crisp glass of white wine for like 2 weeks. I don't drink wine that often. I usually only buy it if I'm cooking with it. I went to a festival the other day and they were selling wine, and I had a glass because I thought that would get the craving, and it didn't. And I was in Tesco and I had this one specific bottle of wine. It's really expensive. And I thought, fucking buying it. So I bought myself. So I've got a glass of wine.
Maybe you're finally entering your supervillain arc.
Oh, I've been there for a long time. I've also got a big bag of crisps, which I'm going to put away because they're noisy snacks to have during a podcast. Hang on, let me just have one more.
Yeah, there's me swapping out my chair, which squeaks, and there's Ben just eating noisy crisps around the podcast.
James, this is my podcast, and so I can do this. There we go. And that's it. That's the last one. But yeah, so my life's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Feeling good. Baldur's Gate 3, though, came out... Let me finish eating this crisp. Nearly a month ago?
Yeah, it was start of August, wasn't it?
And this is us, nearly a month from us recording, because this is a little, we're a little bit ahead because you're going back to work and all that kind of stuff. So, start of August, and we're now at the beginning of September. So we've had a good long time with it. And I'll say this at the top of the episode. I don't expect there to be too many spoilers in this conversation.
Yeah.
Unless you consider mechanics of the game spoilers, in which case, why are you listening to this? Go away. Listen to it when you've played a bit.
Yeah. We've not finished the game.
No, exactly. And I don't think we're going to talk about any story moments really, and we'll stop ourselves if we get into any deep ones.
Yeah.
But having said that, if you don't want to know anything, if you're playing it on console and you've only just got your hands on it, for example, you've not had a lot of time with it, then come back to this episode. So we said a long time ago, and I mean a long time ago, that we were going to do our first playthrough of Baldur's Gate 3 together on co-op.
Yeah.
Now.
I didn't even buy early access or play any of that.
No, we didn't. One of our friends did.
Wesley.
I wasn't going to name and shame him, but okay, yeah, Wes. So we stayed completely clear. We didn't touch the game at all. We didn't watch anything. I didn't even watch the panels from Hell or anything.
I barely even watched trailers. Oh. Apart from like that first initial trailer, I pretty much didn't watch any.
Yeah, that opening cinematic game.
Mm. Yeah.
But I don't want to hear any shit for this. I don't care what you think. All right. I don't buy it to play games on it. I have a MacBook. I work in the creative industry. No. I work in the creative industry. I've had a Mac all my life. I think they're better than PCs. I use both Mac and PCs every single day of my life. I prefer Macs. I spent my own hard-earned money on a fucking MacBook. Get over it. So when they announced that the MacBook version of the game wasn't coming out at the same time, I thought, oh my God, tragedy has struck. We're not going to be able to do it. The PS5 version isn't co-opable with the PC version, which was my backup plan. What the fuck are we going to do? And then I got GeForce Now. Yeah. Oh my God. GeForce Now has changed my life. I mean, it's still annoying. I still want to get off of the thing. I'd rather have the game playing, running locally. But for the last month, it has been the saver. So I've been paying $10 a month to use GeForce Now just to play this game. And we've dived in. We've got to what we think is the near end of Act 2.
Yeah, the crux, probably.
We've seen quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's what... There's three acts?
Yeah, and I've got a friend who's finished the game, and he said he spent a day in Act 1, 7 days in Act 2, 8 days in Act 3. But I think we skipped a lot of Act 2 by accidentally going straight to the bit that kind of says, this is the bit where you can't come back. But we were like, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah, and I went, Ben, maybe we should go somewhere else. And you're like, nah, we'll be fine.
I was too excited. I just wanted to get in there and do the thing. So we played a lot. So we're like level 7?
No,
right?
I think we're like... No, yeah, 8, I reckon.
I think we're 8.
Yeah, because I'm 7... 7 ranger, no, 7 rogue, 1 ranger.
Well, that's what I was going to talk about, our character builds, because obviously that's quite important. So there's 12 is the level cap. There are a lot, every class is in the game except for Artificer, and not every subclass, but a lot of them. So I'm playing a Necromancer Wizard, obviously going the evil route, giving myself all of the illithid powers.
Mm-hmm.
And you are playing what, sorry?
I'm mostly rogue, 7 levels in rogue, and then 1 in ranger, because I want to try a multi-class build.
Mm-hmm.
Using my additional bonus actions.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So there are a lot of differences to core Dungeons & Dragons, core D&D, and we're going to talk about what we would and wouldn't take from the changes that Larian made. Now, obviously, it's a video game. There had to be changes to make it more fun and make it work and all that kind of stuff. And some of it's not going to transition across and translate well, which is why both ways, which is why we're saying the stuff we wouldn't take.
I mean, they've done a cracking job.
Oh God.
It feels like playing D&D in a video game and it's fun.
Yeah. It's a really good game. Our review is 10 out of 10. Go buy, go play. It's a great game, especially if you like 5e. But and D&D in general and Faerunian lore and that kind of stuff. It's kind of we are the core target audience, I think it's fair to say.
Definitely.
But I do worry about people who go and play Baldur's Gate 3 before they've ever played D&D and then go, oh, I really want to play D&D now. Because that transition is gonna be a lot harder than the other way.
Yeah.
Not impossible, but it would be good to get new people in via that route, but I wouldn't want to be that DM who has to explain that no, you don't get 3 bonus actions. And whatever.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the changes. So should we start with like kind of the ones that we've noticed first, the key ones that we've noticed first, and then we've kind of got a list that we've compiled to go through.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do yours first? Because yours is a biggie.
So playing rogue, obviously, you know, you get your subclasses and there's thief, there's assassin, there's arcane trickster. And you know, I'll be honest, never actually played a rogue in tabletop D&D. I'd looked at it a few times, but never quite took my fancy.
But you understand the importance of a skill like Fast Hands?
Yeah, and like...
You've had a rogue in your party
before. Yeah, and like Sneak Attack and all that McGubbins.
Good word.
And I looked at all of my three options, because I'm like, I'll play rogue, because I've done it before and it might be cool. And three options, and I looked at Thief and I was like, I get 2 bonus actions.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
I can hide as a bonus action.
Yeah.
I can dash and disengage as a bonus action.
On the same
time. I can drink potions and do all sorts of things as a bonus action. And it's been so much fun. Bonus action hiding.
Yeah.
Going into sneak attacking and then just walking off somewhere they can't see and pressing hide again.
Yeah. And now I think I have some feelings about this because watching you as your party member, and I'm rooting for you because we're on the same team.
Yeah.
But the DM in my brain goes, this is fucking ridiculous. Like the way you move, like the distance you travel,
the hit points
you deal out.
I think what I will say is, I think that is something, if you really wanted to, you could put it into the tabletop version, where you are gonna have to run stealth to like the bleeding letter. In that you can't just hide in plain sight.
No.
You do have to be heavily or lightly obscured. You do have to have gone around a corner.
You gotta be strict about line of sight.
Yeah, and they will notice where you went missing and they will come and try and find you.
Side note, that's our favourite thing.
Oh, yeah. I'd go and, you know, it leaves a little shadow where they last saw you and then they come over and then, like, you'd see the character models, like, spinning around trying to find you.
But paint this picture if you haven't seen this in the game, right? This game is beautifully animated. You know, they've put a lot of thought and effort into it. And then when they're searching for you, they cut the
character NPC, model just rotates.
They literally just rotate like hard left, hard right, hard north, hard south. Nope, he's not here. Never mind. And it's the hilarious, most janky thing I've ever seen. I love it. It's my favorite thing.
But you know, I think that's a big one, is especially that change to thief, but to bonus actions in general. Everybody now gets some extra ones, don't they?
Yeah, you can. They've taken the classic house rule, which is now table rule, whatever, home rule. What do you call those?
Home rule.
Home rule. Yeah, whatever. They've taken the classic home rule, and that has also now been adapted into one D&D, as far as I'm aware, that drinking a potion is a bonus action.
Yeah.
And I never really overly cared for that because I thought it did kind of subtract from a thief's fast hands.
Yeah.
I think I've changed my ways, having experienced it in Baldur's Gate 3. I think I'm like, do you know what? Yeah, it's fine. It works.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, you can do it, but so can the enemies as well, which I think has always been our take anyway. If you're going to let your players do that as a bonus action.
Yeah. Then your enemies get to do it too.
Yeah.
So that's in there. So yeah. And I think you can, they've got a shove ability now. So in D&D, there is a shove attack, but it uses your action.
Yeah. You replace one of your attacks with it.
Yeah. So if you have a multi-attack, then one of them is a shove.
Yeah. Whereas in Baldur's Gate 3, every class, regardless of, you know, who they are, what skills they've got, can shove as a bonus action.
Which is fun and quite powerful when it's the right situation. Because you can, like, so last night we were playing, my wizard Misty stepped up onto the rafters where these, I sounded so southern then, the rafters, where these cultists were shooting crossbows down from us, and I could, it didn't work because my strength checks were naff. Their saves were too good for me, but I could shove them off the rafters and they would fall and take, you know, a decent chunk of damage.
Yeah.
So it's good, but it's situational and I'm not mad about it.
Yeah.
I think you could probably do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I can't remember exactly what shove does in, I think it's just, is it just not prone in D&D?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. And, you know, knocking someone prone or just shoving them 5 feet back. You know,
I think it shoves them 5 feet back.
Probably, to be fair.
I'd have to check.
You know, and because the problem with some classes with bonus actions, like wizard, they almost never use their bonus action unless it's Misty Step.
Yeah, unless there's a specific spell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
even then, it's costly because you can't do two leveled spells a turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the other two new bonus actions? There's Dip.
Dip, which would not travel across to traditional D&D. So Dip is, and every single video that I've seen that is, here are the tips that I wish I knew about Baldur's Gate 3. Dip is the one they mention. If you carry a candle around with you in your inventory, you can put the candle down on the floor and then dip your sword in it and it lights your sword on fire, which is a very Larian thing. Larian, obviously, studios made the game. They put like fun little interactions and people find stuff all the way through as they're playing and play for 80 hours and then discover something new that they could do. Just dipping your sword in some fire in traditional D&D ain't gonna light your sword on fire. You know, you could implement a system like it, but just straight up, oh, my metal is now hot, fire damage, I wouldn't translate across. It feels too accessible.
Yeah.
Side note, because I want to gloat, and you made me remember, when we were just talking about rules, and I said, like, oh, I'd have to look it up for what shove does. Yesterday we were playing D&D, and I went, oh, yeah, but you can't do that when you're prone. And everyone went, yeah, you can. Yeah, you can.
No. I backed you up. Thank you very much. I was the one that confirmed.
Okay. I can't remember what it was. What was it? It was if you're prone, you have disadvantage
It was if you're prone, you have disadvantage on any attacks you make.
Right. It's a really niche little thing, right? Yeah. People end up prone maybe 40% of the time in the game. Whatever. I went, oh, yeah, mate, remember your attack roll will be disadvantage. Everyone, except James. Went, no, not when you're prone. And me being me went, oh yeah, okay, fine. If three out of four of you are saying that I'm wrong, then I'm probably wrong. And then James went, actually, I've just looked it up and posted it in the group chat and I was right. And I was like, fuck yeah. So all I'm saying is when you think you don't know how to play the game, when you think you don't know the 60,000 rules that are in those books on your bookshelf and you remember an obscure rule and you know it feels right, fucking back yourself. This is an explicit episode, apparently, because I'm drinking wine. Yeah. But back yourself, because I was right, and I want to gloat about it. Anyway.
The third bonus action is jump.
Jump. Is jump a bonus action?
In the game, it is, yeah.
Now, this kind of already translates across to 5e, because in 5e, if you move 10 feet, you can jump. It's as part of your movement. So, in a way, it's kind of a free thing, and you can do a standing jump in 5e.
But no, I mean, like, in our sort of tabletop games, it's only really been recently we've been using the jump. Like,
were you about to say we've been cheesing it?
It is a bit cheesy, for honest.
It is a bit cheesy. And do you know what? In Baldur's Gate 3, the jump is very powerful because it lets you get out of status effect areas, and if the doorway's blocked, you can jump through it past people.
Or like that enemy is like an extra 5 feet away, but if you jump at the cost of 10 feet of movement, you know, a high strength character, they can jump further than their movement will take them.
Yeah.
And then they can get
then
into range.
20 feet, for example. Yeah. That's something I've realized. There is difficult terrain in Baldur's Gate 3 because you can, like, when you're in water.
There's a lot of it, yeah.
But there's no moving through companion or enemy spaces.
No, there isn't. You can't move through. I mean, obviously, I think in D&D you can't really move through enemy spaces anyway.
Yeah, you can. It's difficult terrain.
Oh, yeah.
If they're the same size or smaller, you can move through them. Yeah. If they're bigger, you can't.
Yeah. But no, you just can't move through anything in the game. It is kind of annoying sometimes.
You just jump over them. Even if it's a doorway, you jump over them through the small gap in the doorway like a gold medalist gymnast.
Yeah. I mean, they have really put a lot onto the bonus action, I feel like.
Which is kind of nice, because I feel like in 5e, the bonus action isn't really utilised that much.
Yeah. I mean, so offhand attacks, you know, you can now make without having to take the attack action first.
Side note, now that you're mentioning offhand attacks, can I just point out for everyone listening that, because I'm about to turn around and tell you what's different about Wizard, and everyone's going, oh, James is being different. He went to play Rogue. He's never played Rogue before. And they're going to look at me and go, oh, fucking Ben, of course he played a Wizard, obviously. But what did you say you took Ranger for? yeah, you know what you've done.
I'm going to take it for the two weapon fighting style.
Right, and proficiency my role. In what weapon?
Scimitars.
Right, and sorry, cool. what race are you in Baldur's Gate 3?
A dwarf.
And in our 5 year plus campaign, what have you been playing?
Dual wielding fighter / ranger now.
Who wields scimitars and is a dwarf?
Yeah.
Right, okay, great. Just wanted to put that
but,
on record.
You know,
Thank you.
To be fair, in my defense, you know, playing the rogue.
Yeah.
All the way, and then kind of like, hang on a minute, I've got two daggers, one silences, one, you know, and it's kind of like the offhand always felt sucky because it didn't deal as much damage as the other one.
And so in the back of your mind, Braelar Battlehammer went, come back to me, my son.
Multi-class into the ranger.
Join the Battlehammer clan. Yeah, okay, fine. I just wanted to put that on record so that I feel better about myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, bonus action doesn't feel like it's utilised much in 5e, so it's nice to see it getting a bit of love, even if it doesn't all kind of translate across. And I mean, as someone who's not playing Rogue, I don't use my bonus action half as much as you do. I use it to down potions, and I use it to... Yeah.
But like, you could use it for like shove and them off bits and pieces.
Yeah, it's just less likely to happen for me.
Yeah.
So I'm playing a Necromancer Wizard. And I picked Necromancer because I haven't played a Necromancer in 5e. See, I am being different. And I didn't really want to pick any of the other classes. War Wizard wasn't in there. I really like War Wizard for the ability to go first initiative all the time. Yeah. I could take the alert feat, I suppose, next time we level. But, so Necromancer. The big difference for me... And this is one that I would carry across. I think this is such a good change and almost fixes the Necromancer problem. The way that Animate Dead operates.
Mm-hmm.
So, Animate Dead, you cast it at, is it third level?
I want to say yes. Yeah, level three spell.
You get two, either skeletons or zombies. Skeletons are the ranged options. Zombies are the melee options. In Baldur's Gate 3. Those skeletons or zombies stay with you until you long rest, if they don't die.
Don't they stay with you through the long rest?
No, if you long rest, they go away.
Ah, okay.
But they stay with you for as long as you don't long rest.
And they don't die.
And they don't die. And they get kind of incrementally stronger with you. So if you're a higher level, they attack a bit harder, which is nice because they're not just standard zombies. They have a bit more hit points.
Yeah. They have like undead fortitude as well.
Which is nice. When they attack a creature, that creature has a chance of getting a status effect, which I forget the name of.
Crawling Gnaw.
Thank you. I knew it was something good. If they are affected by Crawling Gnaw and they die, they immediately reanimate as another zombie or skeleton, depending on what gave them the effect. But the difference is that that zombie slash skeleton loses one hit point per turn until it dies. So it keeps you from ending up in a realm where you have 60 zombies following you around because you've gone and attacked a goblin camp, but makes your animate dead feel like you are raising an army of undead to do your bidding. Yeah. It's nice. It's and really nice.
Obviously, as you upcast as well, that too, that you mm-hmm. can do, does increase.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly how much by each level.
I think it's one extra each level.
Yeah. And then, obviously, like, because BG3 only goes up to level 12, you know, you might put a cap on that or make it only every other level you get an extra
zombie
or skeleton. But, you know, something we haven't done yet with it as well in BG3 is when you do it at level 5, you get the ghoul and the flying ghoul option.
Yeah. So you get even more,
yeah.
Which is fun. And as an offshoot, this is related, but it's a different thing that I would carry across, is regional effects. Now, we talk about regional effects in D&D 5e anyway, but I mean this in a different way. So we've talked about regional effects as in like, oh, it's a lair of a creature, or oh, it's a mountain and there's snow, so there might be an avalanche when you make too much sound. What I mean is it's like what's the word I'm looking for? It's on the tip of my tongue.
Do you mean like the water and the earth keeps in the water, or
no. When what's the word for something that's just kind of there and it's happening, like underlying but not underlying? It doesn't matter. Anyway, it only helps you if you use it. It's like it's a thing that's there. It's not gonna change the dynamics of the battlefield or the area. It's just an effect on an area that helps you if you use it. Example. We're in a crypt. We walk into the crypt. It gives me up a little prompt and it says, hey, just so you know, you don't need any bodies around you to use Animate Dead because you're in a crypt. There's enough skeletons and bones and rotting flesh to just animate as many times as you want. So I basically get a, air quotes, free Animate Dead. I can max it out, get as many as I can get out of my spell slots without having to worry about going and finding someone to kill.
Just to be clear, really cool. You can't like multicast Animate Dead and get loads.
No.
You know, once you've cast it, if you then cast it again, it destroys the first lot you had.
Yeah, but it's nice, like, it's a nice little thing, and I think you could absolutely use that in D&D. Like, oh, by the way, you're going into a dungeon that's, you know, underneath a church, you can have free Animate Zombies if you're a Necromancer.
Yeah.
And there can be different versions of that. I mean,
I suppose you can have, you know, if you're in like a really holy place, spells that deal radiant damage deal extra, or
like, oh, you get a free spiritual weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're in your God's church.
Yeah.
Like, fun little bonuses to areas like that. I think you could absolutely take that and use that. And it's on the DM to like not make it ridiculously overpowered.
Yeah.
I think that's the only difference I found with Wizard. No, there is one I found. I found it last night when we played, and it pissed me off. Hang on,
there's the other one of where I've been able to cast two leveled spells in a turn.
Oh, yeah. So
When you Misty Stepped, Lightning Bolted.
And then Lightning Bolted again.
Because you were hasted, yeah. Guys, so yeah. This is where that... Oh, no, that was a different one. So it's so, where you...
So you can Misty Step, which is a leveled spell, and cast a spell in your turn.
Yeah.
It uses a bonus action and action. So that's the break of the rule of two leveled spells. But then we put a hasted potion on me, as potion speed, as it's called in the game.
Yeah.
And I was able to Misty Step to a perfect line. The enemy had lined itself up perfectly, lightning bolted them, and then immediately lightning bolted them again and killed them all.
It was glorious.
It felt amazing, but oh my God, I would not let you do that in my D&D games.
No.
No. Are you joking? You're already a wizard. You're already too powerful. But the one that pissed me off last night, because I didn't read the spell, I just assumed it would work the same way as 5e, and I guess that's the takeaway, is don't just assume it's all going to work exactly the same. I took Greater Invisibility as one of the spells that I could learn when I leveled, thinking, great, I'm going to be unstoppable now. Nothing's going to see me. I'm going to cast spells, it's going to be invisible, it's going to be great. It doesn't work the way it works in 5e. So 5e, cast it, no concentration. Is it concentration?
Yeah, it is.
Right, concentrating on it, but you're invisible, and your actions and your spells don't make you visible. Therefore, you can't be counterspelled. You just fire off spells. Great, love it, wonderful, good time. Wizard's best friend.
But
in fire, in Baldur's Gate 3, you cast it, and then every time you use an action to cast a spell, make an attack, interact with an object, anything like that, your character in the background makes a stealth check. And if it fails the DC, it becomes visible. My wizard isn't stealthy. Why would my wizard be stealthy? He's a smart boy. He gets the enemy in a line, and then he fries their brains with lightning bolts. He's a megalomaniac power monster. He doesn't need to be stealthy. So it instantly fails every time I use it, and
you've only used it the once.
James, I know how low my dex is. It's going to instantly fail every time I use it. what's the point in me having it?
We could stack it with Pass Without Trace.
But that's effort.
I'm pretty sure I've got an item that does that for free.
Yeah, but all of my items are cleverly lined up to give me a mental AC. I want to be untouchable and unseen.
Please.
That's my dream.
One or the other.
No, I want both. I want it all. Buy me another pony.
Oh.
So that annoyed me, and I would not change the way Great Invisibility works in 5e at all. It's beautiful. Don't touch that.
Yeah.
Do you know what does work exactly the way it works? And I was worried. I wasn't sure how they were going to make reactions work.
Yeah, no, they do work quite nicely.
Counterspell in Baldur's Gate 3 is so easy that I run out of third level spell slots too quickly. I'm like, yep, yeah, nope. Oh, what's that? You cast a spell? Nope. Oh, sorry, what's that? You want a fireball me? Nope. And oh, what's that? You want a fireball? Oh, why is the option not there, James? You've used all your third level spell slots, Ben. Fuck.
Looks like we're just on psionic backlash.
Yeah. Love that one. Love that. Free damage. I'll take it.
But no, what is really nice is when it comes up, it is character is trying to cast this spell. You can hover over it, see what it's going to do. But then it also tells you how many targets it's going to hit. So if they're going to fireball and it hits one person, you might go, whatever. If they're going to fireball and it's going to hit 19 creatures, you're going to be like, no.
Yeah, stop that. Stop that immediately. No, you don't.
Yeah.
And I haven't been counterspelled by an NPC yet.
No, I absorbed the counterspell.
And that feels good. As a wizard, not being counterspelled. Having your friends counterspelled instead, that feels really good.
Yeah, as a rogue, by the way, casting Scorching Grey from a pair of gloves.
You know,
it was going to be spicy, and they went, nope.
One thing that Baldur's Gate has made me rethink is, and I used to be a big advocate for every single game I play, I will physically roll my dice on the table. And recently, I've got a really nice dice rolling scroll from the Dice Dungeon, and I keep two sets of dice in there. So when I'm at the table or when I'm running D&D, especially because we play 99% of our games online, if I've got to roll 10d10 damage to Death Ray Dave, for example, which did happen on Tuesday, I'll do a digital roller. But rolling all of my rolls on Baldur's Gate 3 digitally just hurts my heart. And so it would be nice if we all just, abolished digital dice and used real physical dice in every D&D game we ever play. And if you're thinking, well, Ben, I don't have enough dice to do that. I don't have 10d10 to cast Death Ray. I'd love to use my Beholder to kill all my players like you did on Tuesday night, but I can't do that. 10d10's a lot. I go, well, hey, there's a link in the description below that goes to the Dice Dungeon website, and they've got a lot of beautiful dice. In fact, They have premium D&D dice, so you can buy a really nice, beautiful set for your character or for your, hey, this is probably going to kill a PC, so at least I'll use a pretty dice. And then they've got incrementally different level sets. So you've got your nice kind of cheap and cheerful, but really nice looking resin dice. You've got metal dice, wood dice, glass dice, crystal dice, all that stuff. And of course, as the aforementioned, dice rolling trays, books, bags. Oh my God, the Dice Dungeon have so much going on. Sweets and tea. They do D&D themed sweets and D&D themed tea.
And I have had the sweets. They're quite nice.
I haven't had the tea yet. I need to get Ben to send me some. Because being British, obviously tea is the most important thing in our existence. So if you want to experience a good British cup of tea, but buy a kettle, you weird American weirdos, and then get a tea from the Dice Dungeon and make a nice cup of tea. Make a nice cuppa. But if you want to get 10% off your entire order when you're ordering that tea and the dice so that you don't have to use digital ones, you can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout. You'll get 10% off everything in that order. So there you go. Do that. And if you've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 and thinking, wow, this narrator is really good. She knows exactly what to say, when to say it. She's got all the best words. Her vocabulary is incredible. She says the pretty big words that I don't understand and have to stop and Google. Yes, that has happened to us. I want to be like her when I DM. Then head over to Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. Their website is a .com at the end. There's a link to that in the description too. They have professional creative writers writing box text for places, monsters, spells, magic items, scenes, locations, literally anything you can think of, stuff you can use as a player. You can go and check all those out and use those in your games to sound just as good as the narrator from Baldur's Gate 3. They've also got a Sonic library, maps, and loads of other stuff. And if you want to subscribe to Describe and get access to over 10,000 scenes and more, you can use the code COMMON at checkout to get 10% off every month for the first 2 years that your subscription is active. Boom! Go and do that, and your game will be just as good, if not better, than Baldur's Gate 3. James, we've got a list of things that have changed that we haven't necessarily rubbed shoulder to shoulder with Baldur's Gate 3. But
yeah, we can't go through all of the changes.
No, this list is ridiculous.
There's a lot of them. If we're going to think, just thinking class-wise, the range of changes are really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Favoured enemy completely reworked. Instead of picking an enemy you get to fight instead, you get a choice of currently five different options. Who knows, they might add more in the future. Which they kind of, each one gives you like a proficiency and then lets you cast a spell or something. As an example, the cool one I quite like, Ranger Knight, you have sworn to serve Crown Nation and seek to bring its first ruin, gain skill proficiency in history and heavy armor, which is quite nice. Natural Explorer, that's been changed as well. Same thing again, you get certain options, choose from them. Whether it's can cast 5 minutes without expending a spell slot once a long rest, which is nice. Proficiency in sleight of hand if you're like an urban ranger. And then resistance to different damage types. You know, if you've been living in the desert your whole life, you have resistance to fire.
Yeah.
They're just nice little changes.
That's good. I like that. Things in Barbarian that are different. So one that I noticed that's quite nice, Path of the Wild Magic, their magic awareness is different. Obviously, in 5e, it gives you the ability to sense magic, not really useful in the game as a video game.
Yeah.
So instead, as a bonus action, you can give any ally within 10 feet the ability to add their proficiency bonus to saving throws against spells, which is really nice. Nice little like paladin flavor there.
Yeah.
They've reworked Frenzy, so you don't get exhaustion when your Frenzy ends. Instead, your Frenzied attacks, which are the extra attacks that you get when you're in a Frenzy, have a negative that gets
it's like
incredibly
a, yeah, it's
worse.
It's stacking penalty. So yeah. You get, funnily enough, an extra attack as a bonus action. And each time you use it, it basically reduces your like to hit and damage by, I think, 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's nice. What else? Bards. We haven't played Bards yet. Bards are the one we haven't touched.
Yeah.
I want to give it a go because College of Swords is in Baldur's Gate 3 and I really enjoy playing
yeah.
College of Swords for all the flourishes.
I think one big one, and having once again not played the class myself, I probably can't say too much on, is with Warlock. A lot of the features from Hexblade are now been put onto the Pact of the Blade.
Yes, they have.
I think probably all the subclasses can take it if they want, which just sort of gives them that little bit more viability, I guess.
Yeah, because I was Pact of the Blade a Hexblade thing?
I thought it was. This is where I'm completely wrong, because I've never played Warlocks before.
I haven't played Warlock in so long.
I don't know.
Oh my god, wizard change that I've just thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Arcane Recovery. Instead of just short resting it, because short resting, you get only get two short rests in the game, and they're literally click the button, you get your health and your short rest abilities back. So they put Arcane Recovery as an action that you can use to replenish spell slots outside of combat, and it's governed by a number of arcane recovery charges instead of like levels up to half your level, which is interesting. So if you've got four charges, you can get one fourth level spell back.
Yeah.
It's a charge per level. So that's nice. But we found items that give you the ability to use an arcane recovery, like a one-off arcane recovery.
Yeah.
Just recover a spell slot, which is so nice. Of any level.
I mean, yeah, I think, well, there's one that I think only does up to level 3.
I've got a necklace that does up to level 3. I've got a necklace that does up to level 6.
Yeah, which in-game will be level 6. I think the other thing we've not talked about is throwing potions.
Oh, yes. We haven't talked about that. That's a big one, actually. So throwing things is a bonus action in the game.
No, throwing things is an action.
Is it?
Yep. Throwing things is an action.
Well, I'll be damned.
But you can throw a potion. Now, you have to be careful, because the way we heard you could do this, we were doing it wrong. You don't throw the potion at them.
Mm-mm.
Instead, you've got to kind of throw it like at their feet or around
it's
them.
It's a splash radius.
Yeah, so it makes like a little puddle, and then anything in that puddle gets healed.
If it's a healing potion.
Yeah.
You can do it with any potion. So if it's a potion of speed, hypothetically, you could haste everyone in that puddle. We should try that.
But then everyone gets... Because that only lasts 3 turns, and then everybody gets stunned.
Yeah, but, James, all 4 of us could be hasted at the same time.
That would be pretty nice.
We should try that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that works in the game. We should try that. But in theory, it would. But it also means that if you throw the potion, let's say your barbarian's up front, shoulder to shoulder with 2 enemies, and they need healing, and you throw a healing potion at the ground to heal them, it will heal the enemy too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's good. Would you put that in 5e?
No, because it just doesn't make sense.
It's a very video game-esque thing. Yeah.
You know, especially if you've got a guy full of armor. Like, you know, you're telling me his metal armor is going to soak up the healing potion and then impart it into his flesh.
James, it's magic. It can do that if you wanted to.
I suppose if you really, really wanted to, you could probably make some kind of, I don't know, item you could carry around that would let you absorb it or do that.
Is it worth the effort? Probably not.
No.
What else has been changed? At level 6 for Necromancy, the animate death spell is always prepared, doesn't take up one of your slots. Yeah. So that's nice.
I mean, lot of the, you know,
I'd make that change in D&D.
A lot of the spells you get in some of the spell lists have been changed quite extensively. Like, you know, like the cleric domains, you know, some of them have like drastically different spells, or they've just been replaced.
Not every spell is in the game as well, of course. Yeah.
Because some would be broken or just wouldn't translate very well. But, you know,
imagine a world where you get Wish, and the way the game deals with it is you get a little text box, you type your wish in, and then an AI interprets what that would be and then changes the game based on what you wished for.
That would be pretty cool.
Imagine if we lived in that world. That's terrifying.
I mean, have you seen the videos of the weird Skyrim AI companions?
I have, and they're fantastic. I love them. They actually reply to you.
Yeah, that is quite good. On that note, Divine Intervention is in the game. the cleric ability.
How does that work then?
It's only one time use though.
Or ever?
I think ever. Once used, wow. It cannot be cast ever again. It either, you know, can do like massive damage on all enemies to gifting your like your group like loads of potions and camp supplies.
That's fun. I like that.
And on camp supplies, actually.
Go on.
I don't think it's something you should implement like completely into like 5e. I think it could be an interesting thing to consider if you are doing a campaign where you're in a hostile environment, whether that's like Chult in the jungles or in the desert, where it's like, right, okay, you want a long rest. Have you got stuff?
Have you got any supplies?
You know, you're in the middle of nowhere. Yes, you can have a long rest, but it might not be as good because you've not got anything to eat.
And do you guys have bedrolls?
Yeah.
Do you have tents?
And, you know, especially with those exploration campaigns, just making players making sure they've got supplies to have, like, effective long rests. You know, even if you don't want to track, like, are they eating rations every day? Are they drinking enough? If you just want to do, right, okay, not got enough supplies, your rest is only half as effective.
Well, even so, like, we've been playing Tomb of Annihilation, obviously, and we're not in this stage of the game anymore because you're in the tomb now. But when you were traveling through the jungles, we were doing it per the module. So, have you got food? Have you got water? Have you drunk enough? Here's how much you need to drink each day. Mark it off, tracking it all. And it was fun because that's the experience we wanted. But you could easily dumb that down to a... And I'm sure people have done this with, like, wilderness traveling books and things for 5e, but you could dumb it down to, okay, you want to take a rest in this field overnight and camp here? Great. Have you got bedrolls? No. Okay. Then you'll get your full rest, but you're going to have a level of exhaustion because you're not going to sleep well.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have food, water. Okay. You're going to regain half your hit points because you haven't eaten and drunk and you're really hungry. Stuff like that is nice.
Yeah.
You could definitely do that.
Yeah. And I've just on the list, I've spotted, like, I think what I'm going to name is one of my favourite changes.
We're all gone.
So Destroy Undead.
Yeah.
It's shit. As a cleric, it's shit. Because let's be honest, by the time you get Destroy Undead, are you coming across Undead with a CR of a half? No. Probably not. Right?
That's fair.
The way it changes it in the game is... So being based off their CR, if the creature fails its check against the turn, they instead take additional radiant damage.
That's nice, yeah. That's good.
So, like, instead of going, oh, great, destroy undead, what CR are those? Oh, two. Okay. Okay. You go. Right, okay. I use it. Oh, great. Some of them failed, does it? Right, they're going to take an extra this much radiant damage. It actually feels... beneficial.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. It's the same. That's the same kind of flavor as the animate dead spell being a bit more better, a bit better. God, there's so many things in this game, and I feel like with my measly 53 hours, James with his measly 100 hours.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there'll be people with a lot more hours than we've got. Completed the game, completed it 3 times. I would be up there, but I've obviously, as you know, I've been holding myself back.
Yeah, and I've got to say, I alluded to it being a true test of friendship before, but when we didn't think I was going to be able to play this game because of the Mac restriction.
I was willing to wait a month.
A whole month?
To like the original release date.
And here we are now at that point, and you're glad that we found GeForce Now.
Yeah, very glad.
Because... still no word on the old
Mac release,
which is a shame, but I'm coping without it, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And you also have been off on, you know, the summer holidays with loads of free time. And I think we played for a week.
Yeah, I was then off for a week.
You went off for a week. And then we played. And but before that point, you said to me, hey, can I start my solo playthrough now? And I was like, okay, fine, but don't go further than we've been. Yeah. So you're like, I'll stick to act one. I was like, okay, fine. The only, and I'm glad you did, the only time it was like, I was like, is when we were in Act One still, and you'd already been to an area, and you're like, "Hey Ben, you should go there first." I'd be like, "Fuck! Now I know something cool's there, James."
But you appreciated it when it. I can't remember what it was. It was through the animals, weren't Ben? I know you like animals. You were still going to pick that option.
Go and talk to that person. Yeah. So, what was it? At one point, we bumped into some animals or something. It wasn't the oxes. It was something else. And you went, "I know you're going to want to help the animals because you're vegan." And I was like, one half of me was like,
I didn't say it like that dismissively.
You were like, no, it was like, oh.
I think my words were, "Ben, I know what your sensibilities are.
Do you want to pick that option? You pick that." Because obviously we're helping each other, which democracying which options we pick in conversations and stuff. And you were like, "I know your sensibilities, so I'll pick that option." And half of me was like, "Oh, thanks, James. That's really sweet." And the other half was me going, "You've just rolled your eyes at me being vegan and wanting to help the digital cow." But I appreciated it. So I think the takeaway from this conversation is, oh my God, play Baldur's Gate with your best friend.
Yeah.
Do it. It is fucking good fun. So good. And on that note, we're going to go and play more Baldur's Gate 3.
We are.
We're going to take a quick 5-minute break so I can eat some food. Yeah.
I think before we go as well, I think it's like another thing not to into, go look at the changes to Monk as well.
Oh, I haven't played Monk yet, but I really want to because I have heard really good things.
They have, inverted commas, fixed the Monk.
Oh my God. Oh, that's going to be, that's the title of the episode now. Baldur's Gate 3 fixes the Monk, and it's clickbaity and everyone will listen to it.
If it works, it works.
And then we're not going to talk about it until right at the end of the episode, and we're just going to say, "Hey, go and look at the changelog." Yeah,
because we haven't played Monk.
Clickbait.
I haven't played Monk since Joe's game.
When did you play up
Erebus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, that poor tiefling.
I know.
Wow. And his little mouse friend.
Yeah.
They're out there somewhere.
In the wilderness together.
They probably killed each other.
No, they were like besties.
Yeah, but only because Timble was a manic depressive.
Exactly. You got you through the episodes.
Yeah, I suppose so. If you're not playing Baldur's Gate 3, and let's face it, you're probably not because you're listening to this podcast, because if you had free time, you'd be playing Baldur's Gate 3 right now. Maybe you're playing it and listening to this. That's quite cool. I'd love to know if you are. Then go check it out. And if you want more Baldur's Gate 3 conversations, we've actually made a specific channel for it in the We Speak Common Discord so that all of the spoilers and all of that chat are kept separate. You can join the Discord for free right now. There's a link in the description below. Come and join us. Have a chat. Get involved. Request topics, all that kind of stuff. And if you want to support the podcast and get a bit more out of the Discord server, then you can join our Patreon community. There's a link to that below too. There are a couple of different tier options. You can come and join us on our sister show, Tavern Talk, for a drink and have a laugh as one of the Patreon members as well. So go and check it out. It's the best way to support the show. And hey, if that's not your jibe, that's fine. It's cool. It's free internet content, this. Then just share the podcast with a friend who likes D&D. And or Baldur's Gate 3. I have one more question for you, James.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been eating me up inside. And I genuinely, like, it's the only reason I keep playing the game, because I need the answer. Who is Baldur and why does he need this many gates? Thank you for joining me. It's been wonderful having you back. I will see you again next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share us with a friend or D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support the network and the production of new shows like the one you heard today, head to the description of this episode or our social media pages for a link to our Patreon page. You can connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at We Speak Common. The network theme is Street Dancing by Timecrawler82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.